everyone. Welcome to another episode of Bitcoin Banter. Have Rick with me today. Tony couldn't make it. He's got a busy morning as Bitcoin pumps and continues to look promising on this bull run. So we've got some news to jump into here. We will start with Polymarket has the probability for a U.S. national Bitcoin reserve rising above 50%. We could talk about some other things too, Rick, about Lummis's bill, about Pennsylvania being the first state to propose a bill to take on a strategic Bitcoin reserve. But I would love to hear your thoughts on this.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, this strategic Bitcoin reserve is the thing that's on everyone's lips at the moment, right? Like this is kind of the latest buzz thing, right? Strategic reserve this, strategic reserve that. So, yeah, the first interesting thing is Polymarket, right? Like Polymarket's got a bit of a reputation for predicting things that do actually, you know, turn out to be true. So, you know, most recently, I think on Polymarket, they predicted Trump's win, the election win. So that was quite interesting. Also, I heard this week, actually, that the CEO of Polymarket, the FBI just like raided his house or something. I have no idea what that's in relation to, but I don't know. Maybe some Democrats lost some money on the Trump election and they're unhappy about it. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, back to the strategic reserves then. I mean, again, it feels like an inevitability, right? Like, you know, I remember a few years back when El Salvador suggested they were going to, you know, start their Bitcoin journey. And, you know, that was crazy to hear. And we always talked about, well, you know, inevitably more countries will get on board. I think what's quite exciting, or maybe I wouldn't have expected actually, is that, you know, no other smaller countries made the leap like El Salvador did before the US seems to be sort of positioning itself, you know, to use Bitcoin as a reserve asset. So yeah, that surprised me a bit. You know, I'm not sure anyone was ready for the U.S. to be the next group to jump in. But it, you know, when the U.S. president is saying that's what he's going to do, I guess people take that at face value to a certain extent. The thing that's maybe more interesting for me is, you know, if Pennsylvania or you know the federal government or Trump or whomever come out and say, well, we're going to start buying Bitcoin. The question that interests me most is like, with whose money? Right? With whose money are you going to do that? So, you know, well, we know how they either tax you, right, and buy Bitcoin. That's one way the government can get money. Or what they can do is print money and buy Bitcoin. Now, if they print money and buy Bitcoin, I don't know if I'm so sure why everyone in the Bitcoin community would be so excited about that prospect, right? Because it's like, we know that printing money is theft. So we're kind of celebrating the government like stealing from us and then going and buying. Yes. And going buying their own Bitcoin. Personally, yeah. I'd rather they stole from us a little less and maybe the average citizen could get a bit more Bitcoin for themselves, right? Like I generally trust the average man in the street more than I trust my government. So I, you know, if it were up to me, I would make sure Bitcoin was as distributed as possible. So I don't know. Maybe it's the final theft because, you know, we're removing their ability to print money, you know, eventually altogether. But if their final theft is to I don't know, hyperinflate their currency while they chase after Bitcoin and then all the other countries follow suit and obliterate their currencies. I mean, it's going to get absolutely crazy. I mean, if you're holding Bitcoin and that's happening, then. Yeah, your Bitcoin will be worth infinity in fiat currency eventually, right? And you're likely to become wealthy. But I don't know. It's gonna be crazy, man. Can you imagine what a small percentage of people are really truly into Bitcoin at the moment versus the rest of the population, and what happens to the rest of the population if governments start printing money to buy Bitcoin? Like, you know, some people are going to be in a real big trouble here, and there might be a bit of social unrest and a bit of chaos, right, that comes first. So I don't know, it's almost bittersweet, right? I'd still always rather regular people got their Bitcoin stack up. I'm maybe less excited about government stacking than maybe other people, right?
Yeah, well, I'll say something that is a non-macro, non-financial guy, something that might may or may not make sense. The third option for accumulating a Bitcoin strategic reserve is taking on more debt, but if you're paying, you know, 4% interest on that debt and you're using that debt to accumulate Bitcoin, which appreciates at 50%, I mean, that's an opportunity for the government to actually be able to pay back that debt, because they've their return on it is so much better, and to begin accumulating Bitcoin. So that's one possibility. If the government were to do that, it could kick off game theory that maybe, you know, forces other governments to buy, and maybe we don't see that downward volatility that we've historically seen. So I'm not promoting the issuance of more debt. We have $36 trillion, I think, as of now, as of like yesterday or today. So, yeah. But it's so again, that's not a proposal, but maybe another roundabout way, instead of literally adding zeros to a spreadsheet or printing physical money, that they might be able to accumulate it and be able to actually pay some of the debt. So
I totally agree with you, right? I couldn't agree with you more. Like, of course it's a good idea for the US government to print money to buy Bitcoin. Hell, if I had my own money printer, what do you think I'd be doing? Right? Like, and of course the US government will be better off if they buy Bitcoin, right? That's true of everyone, including the US government, every other government, and all this. And yeah, I don't doubt that if governments are holding Bitcoin, it maybe eases out some of the volatility in Bitcoin's price. Or, well, maybe not, right? Because volatility is measured in dollars. And if the US government abandoned the dollar in favor of Bitcoin, maybe the exchange rate goes really volatile for a little while. Who knows? But yeah, it's a good idea for anyone, including a government, to get Bitcoin. But it makes sense. But I'd rather see like average people go out and get it and front run your government, like get out ahead of these people, because it's going to take them a little while to get their ducks in a row, right? I remember when El Salvador went for it, everyone kind of thought, oh my God, this is it. Every country is going to pile in. And maybe it does happen quickly. I don't know. I don't have a crystal ball. But in my experience, people tend to overestimate how quickly, you know, the machine will work and things will start to have an impact on price. So I think there's maybe, I don't know, if the US government does that, you've maybe got 12 months to, you know, get in front of your government as quickly as possible and increase your stack. Because, yeah, it does appear that we're going to be leaving fiat currency behind in certainly our lifetimes, you know?
Yeah. The other comment you made, the curiosity as to why other nation states post El Salvador hadn't started adopting Bitcoin, especially smaller countries that presumably could move a bit faster than, say, the United States. So I saw this this great quote from it was in Jimmy Song's newsletter in the last day or two. He said, "The fearful stay well within the Overton window. The rebellious play at the edges. The courageous go where their knowledge and understanding take them, which these days is well outside." And love him or hate him, doesn't really matter. You got to give Nayib Bukele a lot of credit for taking a big risk and moving well beyond the Overton window to take on a strategic Bitcoin reserve to accumulate a Bitcoin a day every day since adopting it as a legal tender. But man, I think if the United States makes any serious move, so I'm really torn on this, because as an American who anticipates the government's continued existence for some time to come, whether I like that or not, I would rather my country have, you know, certain influence, not over certain, obviously I don't agree with everything the United States does, but, you know, versus say China, right? But at the end of the day, I think the game theory suggests if the United States gets in on this, there are going to be other countries who come clean and say, okay, we've been mining Bitcoin for 2 years now, or we're going to start buying more Bitcoin or whatever. And things could get really, really wild. But to your point, I really hope retail investors take and heed Jimmy's advice, and they make the courageous act based on their knowledge of adopting a Bitcoin standard and accumulating before all of the madness of, you know, global sovereign nation adoption. So,
yeah, I mean, that's a great point. I mean, it's crazy. It's a crazy piece of history we're living through, because, you know, we know through the history of money that, you know, at one point the Dutch had the reserve currency of the world, then it was the British, and then it was the Americans. And, you know, it seems that over time, fiat currencies, you know, they become dominant, and then another currency overtakes them, or another nation overtakes them. And, you know, maybe when we look back at this, we'll see that, you know, the US dollar was maybe topping out in terms of its influence. You know, you have the BRICS countries all sort of trading with one another now, and, you know, questioning whether they want to do trade in the US dollar. And, you know, I've thought for a long time, well, you know, when Bitcoin exists, the question would be, why would any country ever trust the currency of another country again as the sort of global reserve asset? So it seemed to me like any country that really moved quickly and adopted Bitcoin would sort of create that dominance again, of their nation. And in a weird turn of events, it almost may seem that the US, by following this path, could very well sort of maintain their number one, economic power status. I mean, it's an energy rich country as well. You have a lot of resources over there, but with Bitcoin as well, I guess what I'm saying is, imagine a different country had got out onto Bitcoin and aggressively accumulated it before the US, which for all we know might have happened. We don't know that that hasn't happened, but yeah, I mean, maybe that means the US remains the superpower of the world for another 200 years. Who knows? I mean, it's a wild time to be alive, right? But I mean, yeah, you've got to back yourself though. You've got to go get your own slice of some Bitcoin to protect your own interests, because sometimes the government, may protect your interests, but sometimes it might not. So, sometimes you got to vote for number one a little bit as well.
Yeah, I think you might be that's the most generous I've heard you toward the government, that sometimes they might protect your interests. All righty, speaking of government not protecting your interest. Good morning. This is from James Lavish. While everyone has been focused on the election and markets, the US government has quietly amassed another $100 billion of debt so far this month. Next stop, 36 trillion. This was yesterday. I don't know if I have it up. I woke up to the news that I believe we've crossed 36 trillion in debt, so wouldn't surprise me. We're on our way if we haven't actually technically made it there at the moment. Rick, any comments on the ballooning debt?
It's bonkers, isn't it? It's like the other side of the story. As Bitcoiners, on Bitcoin Twitter, we all get hyped up about, okay, there's going to be a US strategic reserve. Like, is Microsoft buying some? How much is Michael Saylor going to buy? And we're all hyper focused on, Bitcoin and what the Bitcoin market's doing and all that sort of stuff. But the other side of the coin is, well, the other side of the coin is why Bitcoin was created in the first place, which is, fiat currency is it's just completely broken, right? It's like an unbalanced equation. It simply defies logic, how money is created and it's created as debt. And it's got to the point now where the US government is in so much debt, it's almost unfathomable. Something that the listeners might find interesting is I wrote an article like a few weeks back, where I sat down and I did the maths of like how long it would take you to get into $35 trillion worth of debt if you spent $1 million every day, right? And man, even the number blew my mind. It would take you 100,000 years. 100,000 years of spending $1 million every day to spend $35 trillion. Right, to put that into some perspective, right? Obviously, like Jesus was born like 2,000 odd years ago, right? So, like, we're talking 100,000 years, right? If Jesus is 2,000, we're talking like 100,000. I looked this up. Apparently, like that takes you back to the what is it? The Pleistocene era, when apparently woolly mammoths were roaming around the planet, right? So like I'm not bullish, I'm like mammoth-ish, right? Because you cannot comprehend like this level of debt. 100,000 years, $1 million a day it would take you. And the crazy thing is it's accelerating, right? Again, I should have probably pulled up the article I wrote, but I looked up like how much they were spending on defense and how much the interest on that debt is. And we're not a million miles away from the interest on the debt. At some point in the next 20 years, we could be in a situation where the interest on all of that debt that the US government has is more than they collect in tax dollars every year.
Yeah.
And that's I now we're at a point where I don't even know how you paper over that anymore, right? Like you take in less money than the interest on your debt. Like you're not even, not only can you not pay down the capital that you owe, you can't pay the interest on it either in full. So, that is insolvent. Like you're completely and utterly bankrupt. Like it's game over. And yeah, like I said, we get focused on what Bitcoin's going to do and how it's worth X amount of dollars without maybe always considering that, what's a dollar worth anymore when we're in this situation? Because, I mean, what is the US government going to do? I don't really care who's in power, whether it's been Harris or Trump or, the next guy. how do you solve that problem? And I think, history has always told us that governments, when they get into the situation, they can either default on the debt or they can print money and print their way out of trouble. And I think they're going to print their way out of trouble. And typically that means that the value of the currency is just going to absolutely nosedive. And the real red herring in all of this is, in previous history when it's happened, there's been no real escape route like Bitcoin that exists. So, man, what comes next? I don't really know. I guess I just, I maybe I'm a bit cautious now, right? But I think, like, while I'd be excited about my purchasing power in Bitcoin going up, I'm also incredibly nervous and wary about what society might look like over the next 10 or 15 years if this thing goes belly up, because, everybody's got their money wrapped up in real estate, in mortgages, in the stock market. Very few people have reasonable exposure to Bitcoin. And you can be a Bitcoiner and have done well and be wealthy, but I'm not sure you do want to be a wealthy person in a society that's collapsed around you. That doesn't sound like, I don't think you're going to be like strolling around in a sports car having the best time ever, right? So, yeah, what an insane situation. And it's remarkable that no one's talking about it, right? Like $36 trillion. Woo, that's wild.
What I still haven't pieced together either is like, okay, so we've taken on 100 billion in new debt in a couple of weeks basically. Where's that money going? Like, what the hell are they doing with that money? They've been lent this money and my life's not getting any better. The potholes are still out on the roads. Like what's actually happening here? And my best guess, and maybe this is a bit cynical, but it's that special interests and lobbyists, like other people are benefiting immensely. It's the Cantillon effect, really probably playing out in real time, because I can't come up with any other explanation for how this money is being used in any sort of productive sense. That's always my general assumption of government, is that it's largely not productive. But occasionally the government will do something where it's like, okay, like, hey, great, we put in a new road or something like that's, eases traffic, right? It's like I don't see any of that. This is all just like something's happening behind closed doors, it appears. And I have no idea where the money's going. But I know
Well,
that.
man, I mean, Musk is out here flying rockets around every day. Where I'm sure plenty of money is going to NASA. What are they up
Yeah,
to
what are they
these days?
doing? Yeah.
What are you guys doing? Like, Musk's out here shooting stuff into space, and awfully quiet over there. I mean, maybe Musk is going to reveal all, right, with his government efficiency plan or whatever. Maybe we'll discover. I mean, can you imagine, man? Can you even imagine going through the books and looking at the mad shit that your government funds? Because, like, man, you see it sometimes here in the UK, and you're like, there'll be some sculpture in the park, right? And it'll be rubbish. It'll be absolute nonsense crap that they've bought, right? And then you'll see, like, they've paid like 50 grand for it. Meanwhile, like, traffic lights don't work, and there's homeless people lying around, and it's infuriating, right? I mean, if I had one wish, it would be that Elon Musk is like genuine in his intention to like go and sort this out, because the mind boggles, and I'm sure it's just as bad in the US as it is everywhere else in the world, right? But yeah, I mean, they're gonna pr keep printing money, they're gonna keep wasting money. I mean, and even if Elon and the Republican Party do a great job, you can't square this circle now. Like, it's out of control. The debt is going to continue to rise, so get out of the way is the option, right? Get some Bitcoin and get out of the way of this thing.
Yeah, man. It's not, as Lynn Alden says, nothing stops this train. All right, we got one more for you. So hundreds of British citizens. So this is close to home for you, my friend. Including journalists are reporting they've been visited by police this weekend. So I think this was last weekend, regarding X posts. Rick, have you, dude, you've got to be getting a visit paid for this show soon.
I don't know, man. I mean, like, in my past, I've had like posts on LinkedIn like blocked and removed, but nothing like too serious. But I try not to put anything out there that's like too salacious, right? Like, I'm a pretty happy guy generally, right? Like, I'm not looking for a big argument with anyone online. I'm certainly not Andrew Tate, right? Like, just start swearing and screaming at people. But at the same time, I mean, this is genuinely terrifying, right? Like, I'll say, let's put this message out as an SOS to our friends in the US. Like, please send some guns over or something to protect us, right? Because, man, right. So the story is, right, what's happened is the police have gone round and they've gone to a journalist's house, right? And this journalist works for a really big, well-known newspaper called The Telegraph. And basically, they're saying they're charging her with an offence, which we're not sure what that is yet, over some hateful post that she posted on social media a year ago, apparently, right? And they're refusing to tell her what the post was. They're also refusing to tell her who is like her accuser or anything like that. And man, I mean, that should be terrifying to anyone with any sort of even, vague semblance or understanding of history. Like, this is like the Stasi in East Germany, right? Like, just knocking on the doors of journalists for wrongthink. Like, this is a terrifying situation. And it's not all just like, it's not all some fake joke. Like, it's really happening. Like, some 23-year-old care worker, I think, this week got arrested and put in jail for 9 months. And all she was guilty of was filming a protest, right? So she filmed parts of a protest. She wasn't protesting herself. She just literally recorded it. Now, look, I don't dig into these stories in any great depth, right? Because, we're all busy people. But, maybe she posted some like pretty horrid things to say online. Things that you and I might not ever say online, or it might be really offensive, or maybe even racist. I don't know. But, to be arrested and jailed for 9 months, I mean, the way to deal with people who say unsavory things is to point out maybe where they're wrong or incorrect, or, you don't attack free speech and lock people up for thinking or expressing the wrong thoughts. Like, that's a thin end of the wedge, and something that's quite terrifying, right? So, yeah, it's a crazy place. I mean, we've joked before on this podcast about, like, in the UK now, I'm not able to go and buy a chicken. Right, like a little chicken that lays eggs. I'm not allowed to do that unless I go and get like a license from my government, right? I don't think people really fully understand how bad things are getting in communist Britain. But like, Keir Starmer is an absolute psychopath. Like, he's totally out of control, and he's locking these people up, accusing them of causing unrest and civil unrest, when actually he is the guy who's a race baiting, awful, terrible, despicable person, right? Like, he encourages all of the racial divide in the UK. In fact, stokes it up and irritates people to get the response, and then he runs around and locks them up. And at the same time, I'll point out, right, he's letting people, the jails here are full, right? So to lock you up for tweeting, he first has to let out some actual criminals out of jail. And man, you would not believe the people getting let out on the streets. We're talking like drug dealers, people who've been accused of stabbing people, raping people, and other people are getting 9 months in prison for recording. So I mean, I can't even believe, like, I'm talking to you about this on a podcast. It's so outrageous. But yeah, the Americans should feel, I think, quite lucky that Elon Musk bought Twitter, and that President Trump, I mean, I'm not a big political guy, but when I see your president talking about like really being serious about free speech, I think, well, fingers crossed that's the case, right? Because I know how bad it is if you lose it. Like, it's scary stuff.
It's yeah, absolutely wild. And this is what baffles me, is that people assume that, like, what we saw in Nazi Germany or Stalinist Russia, or like you name it, oh, it would never happen here. And the seeds are being planted, like particularly in the UK with some of this, the lockups for social media posts. I mean, literally just people filming things or sharing things. And some of the comments I've seen that people have been locked up for are admittedly horrible comments. But you should be able to make those comments, and people should just be able to dunk on you and say, "You're an idiot, go away, shut up." And like, you silence stupidity with rational thought, right? Not jail time. And it's like, guys, this is how what you think could never happen here happens here. Like, this, it's beginning. And if you don't figure it out and say enough is enough, it will continue to happen and it will get worse. And just like in COVID, they, like, once they realized that they could lock down the economy, then they start putting in mandates, and then they start you know, terrorizing mm-hmm. people who didn't do the things that they wanted you to do. And it's like, this is how it happens, slowly, then suddenly, right? And it's just, it's a tragedy that most people are completely asleep at the wheel on this, you know, no yeah, concept I mean, of just how scary it is.
During COVID, it was out of control, man. You know, like in the UK, it's out of control, right? They had posters up at the bus stops and all over town, like basically with a picture of a guy with a ventilator mask on saying, can you look this man in the face and say, I'm unvaccinated? And I was like, well, yeah, hell yeah, I'll look him in the face and say, I'm unvaccinated. Because, you know, I am not the cause of his illness. I am not the cause of his death. But, you know, the government were out here sort of painting, you know, like, let's talk about like hate speech and stuff. Like some of the outrageous things that were said. You know, we had news hosts saying that people should be rounded up and forcibly injected and all this and all of that, right? All of that rhetoric and all of that craziness, right, is totally okay. In fact, now all the journalists and the government say are coming out and saying, well, we never actually forced you. And I'm like, right, okay, yeah, you didn't. I mean, you were one step short of like literally coming around the house. I mean, man, I had signs stuck on my car window and stuff by these people. Like, you know, why? Oh, I'm not even going to get into it, right? But I agree with you, right? Like, you know, who decides what's a horrible thing to say and what's acceptable and what's not acceptable? Is, man, we're like, basically it's 2024, but it feels like 1984. It's amazing to me, actually, the amount of people in the EU and the UK in general who don't care about their free speech. Like, that would blow your mind, I promise you. Like, if I bring this up at like a dinner table or something like that, like, oh man, well, you know, my wife will be sitting there going, oh, Rick, don't, because it's going to be an unpopular opinion, right? That I think we should be able to say whatever we want. And if you say rude and offensive things, everyone just thinks you're a dummy and that's the punishment, right? Not getting sent off to the gulag, Keir Starmer's gulag. But there we go, you know, it's a funny thing to talk about because, you know, in the group chats I'm in, and or I maybe have like a certain group of a type of friend, but we're all just plotting our escape. Like, we're all figuring out like which countries we're going to go to instead, where can we get residencies, like where can we go and live. So yeah, I mean, the UK is in a bit of trouble. Like, you know, the price of energy in the UK through the roof. Like, we're the most expensive in Europe. We got rid of all our coal power stations. We invested too heavily into green stuff, which is just not sustainable. It's not going to work. And now there's talk about we're going to fund like some solar farm in Africa and route all the energy from Africa through about 7 different countries who will no doubt take their cut on the way and make the energy even more expensive. By the way, we're in the North Sea where there's a load of oil, right? Like, this is absolutely like, man, the lunatics are running the asylum in the UK is all I would say to our American listeners if they're wondering.
Yeah, well, we're inching that direction. You guys are just running. Rick, I think that's probably a good place to wrap up for everyone listening. If you're in the UK, you got to check out the Bitcoin Way. We have Plan B residency options for you. Very important to consider today. You can go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast to schedule a free 30-minute consult and learn more. We also help with 100% proper Bitcoin self-custody, online privacy, setting up privacy phones. It's important to protect yourself, to stay self-sovereign in this day and age. It's never, never been more important. So thebitcoinway.com/podcast, schedule some time with us. We'd love to talk with you. And Rick, absolute pleasure, as always, speaking with you. We will catch up soon, my friend.
All right. Cheers, Michael.
Cheers, brother.